Subject this evening is Tomorrow's World, and that is to be given by our brother Neil Jaques. And he's asked that as an introductory reading we take Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah chapter 35. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes. And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, no fools, shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall be there, but the redeemed shall walk there. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. But now ask for your attention as our brother speaks to us on that subject, Tomorrow's World.
Well, a very good evening, everyone. And we're going to look at something this evening that, looking around at the audience, I suspect most people will have heard of a television programme called Tomorrow's World. With one or two in the audience, I imagine you were probably very young when it was on the TV. One shaking the head, so it may be that you've never heard of the programme. But nevertheless, that's what we're going to start off with, because it's true that many of us here this evening will actually remember that science and technology programme that ran from, believe it or not, July 1965 to the beginning of 2003, when every week, believe it or not, as many as 10 million viewers would watch this particular programme called Tomorrow's World, and it involved various new developments that had taken place in science and technology, and they were introduced and explained upon the programme. And we can look back with fondness at some of the developments that I suppose we now take for granted, don't we? But equally, there were others that weren't quite as successful. And as I show you some of the slides, you will smile at the and wonder at the ridiculous nature of some of them. You see, back in 1979, the first mobile phone was demonstrated. And some of you will remember this gentleman, Michael Rudd. And actually on the program itself, I've just taken a still shot of it, but he actually was started off in an office and then walked out of the office, having put his landline, as we call it. We still call it a landline, don't we? We still put the phone down, and he went out into a Land Rover, out into the field, and used this phone, which, as you can see, looks very much like a walkie-talkie with a handset. And we look at that mobile phone of 1979, and look at the ones we may have in our pocket at the moment, and thinking, wow, how things have changed. Well, not just the mobile phone, but do you remember something called a cassette tape? Now, cassette tapes were all the rage back in the day, as they say. except for the fact that they did become sort of tangled in the cassette player, didn't they? And the amount of hours we'd spend with reams of cassette tape over the floor while we were trying to feed it back in. I still remember how useful the pencils were to put into the spools to wind them back. That was back in 1981. And there's a gentleman there, as you can see from the slide, called Kieran Prendeville. And he introduced us to a plastic compact disc. I wonder how many people knew that's what CD stood for, but nevertheless, that's what it is. It was a device that was introduced back in 1981, and it had upon it little micro-sized Morse code type holes with slots and holes that allowed a laser to shine through it and then produce sound. And of course, it's fair to say that most of us probably still use these today, at home, in the car. And the presenter then, as you can see from the text on the left-hand side, the presenter questioned whether there was a market for such a device. 36 years later, they're still sold in hundreds of millions. And incredibly, they now even have blank recordable CDs. But it's staggering to consider that a personal computer has been with us in some form or other since 1967. I can remember having an Amstrad 1640. And there's some of the audience thinking, a what? Well, you've all seen that famous program, The Apprentice. There's a gentleman there called Alan Sugar. Amstrad stood for Alan Martin Sugar Trading. That's where we get the name from. He was heavily involved in the development of Amstrad. He was also involved in the development of Tottenham Football Club, but that's another story. It didn't quite go to plan. But the personal computer has been with us now for many years. And it was the prediction of experts, as you can see on the slide, that by 1987, all new houses being built in this country and abroad would have special computer points. That didn't really happen, because what the people in 1967 hadn't thought of is something called Tinternet. That allowed for that. That came in the year 2000 from memory. But it's true to say that most households do have a personal computer of some type or other today. Now, there are many examples of some successful developments that we could show, and there on the slide are a few of them. Some of us in the audience may have benefited from laser eye surgery. It's a routine thing, as is touchscreen devices. I'm sure most of us have got a touchscreen device on our person. Maybe not all, but most of us. But there are just as many examples of developments that, well, shall we say, didn't develop. The bizarre robotic secretary. Now, my apologies to some of you who have got a secretary at work, and I'm sure you wouldn't dare to describe her or him as robotic. But nevertheless, it was something that somebody decided they would invent, a robotic secretary. The floating bicycle. I know Birmingham and the Black Country has many canals, but I don't see many of those bicycles upon them. And of course, there was man's insatiable desire to find life upon Mars. 52 years ago, Raymond Baxter was talking in the very first episode of Tomorrow's World about trying to discover life upon Mars. And we're still trying. There are many and various examples of man desiring to know what life will be like in tomorrow's world. Vast amounts of money and effort are spent on planning for the future. Governments use strategic planning in all areas to make provision for the future. Banks use financial planning methods to encourage business developments. Industry uses business planning to encourage growth and investment. And of course, individuals make plans for their future with such things as savings, pensions, equity release, and many other examples of planning for tomorrow's world. And yet, as we know, planning can go seriously wrong, and our plans can be destroyed by something or anything, in particular by forces of nature. How often have we heard the phrase, we should expect the unexpected? Now, I personally find, although I understand the intent behind the idiom, I find it quite a ridiculous statement. Because how can you expect the unexpected? Because then it wouldn't be unexpected, would it? But nevertheless, that's what people often say. Governments and government plans have been seen to fail in very recent times, as we know. June the 23rd, 2016 is probably a date that we will all remember for various reasons. It was a momentous day in many different ways and for many different people. In the morning of that EU referendum, which we've now come to know as Brexit, there was seen to be a majority of people in this country who wanted to remain in the EU. And that slide shows the information that was published at 10 a.m. on the day, published by the Daily Express, and the text there, which I'm not going to read out, but it reminds us of the uncertainty that was felt by many people upon that day. Now, reflecting upon that day, many have confirmed that the polling stations in the London area would be extremely busy. And it was very important, as many people living and working in that area of London were expected to vote to remain. It was the middle of June. Who would have expected the thunderstorms, the flash floods that rocked London? And to quote from the text on the screen there, it caused chaos across Britain in the final hours of the EU referendum as commuters were left stranded in London. And the most remarkable thing about the thunderstorms and the flash floods was the direction from which the weather pattern came, from a most unusual direction, from the southeast. Very unusual, yet it happened. We can remember with amazement the outcome of that day. And it's perfectly summed up there in the headlines for the 24th of June 2016. The Daily Mail for that Friday published what they called an historic edition. It had a paragraph there, as you can see on the front page, that read, "It was the day that the quiet people of Britain rose up against an arrogant, out-of-touch political class and a contemptuous Brussels elite." You could see which side of the fence they were on, can't you? They were in no doubt as to what they were thinking about the EU. So what did tomorrow's world hold in store for Britain? Well, doom and gloom was the forecast. They said that economic growth would be reversed. They said that unemployment would rise, that lending to business would fall, and that mortgage lending would also be affected. This was the information that was found in the Mail Online, published on August the 1st, 2016. And the Leave campaigners were gloating. The nation was worried about the future. And what happened? Some 4 months later, the Times described things very differently. They said that Britain has the world's top economy. That's what they claimed in the headline published, as you can see there, on Friday, January the 6th of this year. They explained that growth had accelerated after Brexit. That business activity was at a 17-month high, with the economy growing by 2.2% of gross domestic product, GDP. GDP had grown, and the newspapers were describing the doom and gloom that follow Brexit as a Michael Fish moment. Because they saw, as you can see on the BBC website for January 6, 2017, they saw that the highly qualified, experienced and highly paid forecasters, financial forecasters, not just weather forecasters, but they saw that these experts had got things badly wrong. It was said that the experts hadn't expected the unexpected. Not just in 2016, but also back in 2008. It was a Michael Fish moment, they said. And they asked themselves the question, as you can read from the text there, would politicians believe these people anymore? That question is still to be answered. But there were other events that no one could have anticipated. Where were you on that night when the raid that resulted in the death of Osama bin Laden took place? Where were you when the attack on London took place a day after the awarding of the 2012 Olympic Games? We probably can remember where we were when that attack took place upon the Twin Towers in New York. We probably can remember that sobering moment when President Bush is told that America was under attack. And there you can see a photograph of Andrew Card, his chief of staff, whispering into President Bush's ear in a school. I believe from memory it was in Minnesota. But nevertheless, that doesn't matter. He was in a primary school. And Andrew Card had to think quickly about what to say to the president without asking him a question that required an answer. So he spoke a few words and said, "A second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack." Now I can remember looking at that picture and seeing it live at the time and being amazed at how well the president managed to keep his cool and not let anything on his face portray what was happening in his country. Because since those days, our friend, Mr. Trump, has come on the scene. How many people anticipated the success of this man? How many people expected that unexpected event? And the picture on the right-hand side, I think, sums it up perfectly. What have they done? And of course, the worry and the fear that was felt by many because of his rhetoric and his plans is shown there in the headline. Trump wins, now the world waits. It's quite interesting the way that the publishers, where they've printed the title of the newspaper, The Guardian. And of course the Independent also fronted with a country divided, protests in the streets, volatile markets, and a billionaire reality TV star is elected leader of the free world. Welcome to Trump's Empire State. This, dear friends, is tomorrow's world. Tomorrow's world, man's way. Is there an alternative? Well, God has an alternative, and we can read about it in his word, in the book that we have probably on our laps, the Holy Bible. Because the Bible tells us a great deal about God. In our first reference, and you can look them up or you can read them from the slides, it's entirely up to you, but in our first reference from 1 Chronicles 29, we read of his power. We read that he's the head of all things in the heavens and in the earth. And there we read, "Thine, O Yahweh, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom of Yahweh. Thou art exalted as head above all." Straightforward. No contradiction. And then in the next reference from Isaiah 45, we're left in absolutely no doubt about his authority. I am Yahweh. There is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me, that they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am Yahweh. There is none else. I form the light and create darkness. Notice the next bit, and some of the churches around us would find this very difficult to accept. I make peace and create evil. I, Yahweh, do all these things. The all-powerful creator then is quite clearly from those verses in control of all things, even nature itself. And he was aware that man would turn away from him, that man would rely upon his own abilities to survive. And there on that next slide, we have a quote from 2 Timothy chapter 3. If you want to turn to 2 Timothy, we're just going to read a few verses prior to the verse that's on the screen. Because in 2 Timothy, a verse and a set of verses that you will know well, the Bible tells us what mankind would be like in what Paul describes as the last days. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 2 to 4 initially, where we read, "For men should be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God." The Apostle Paul really did like to produce lists, and here's one of them. But it's a list there that has a description made up of words that describe modern man and the modern world, and describes them absolutely perfectly. But notice the key verse, verse 5, it's there on the screen. It says, "Such people have a form of godliness, but deny the power thereof." And what does Paul suggest and say to his son in the truth, Timothy? "From such turn away." Because in this verse, Paul is explaining to Timothy that in the last days, even though some of mankind would show some signs of reverence or piety, that many would deny or even contradict the miraculous power that God shows in the forces of nature and has shown throughout the generations. And such denial is even evident within some parts of the Christadelphian meetings and brotherhood. Those who wish to minimise or naturalise some of the wonders or miracles that are recorded in the Word of God. So what will tomorrow's world be like in God's hands? In Zechariah chapter 8, we read in those three verses a wonderful picture of peace and security that is rarely experienced in the modern world, especially if you've been watching the news over the last 10, 20 years, especially in the city of Jerusalem. Let's look at the words of Zechariah 8, verse 4. "Thus saith Yahweh of armies, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Thus saith Yahweh of armies, if it be marvellous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvellous in mine eyes, saith Yahweh of armies." But you see, the word "dwell" there in that few verses is perhaps a little understated in the English, because the word is better understood as to tarry, or to inhabit, to spend more time living there. And the words in those few verses describe a city where old men and old women feel comfortable sitting in those open places or plazas, as we call them today, watching the young children playing. That's the sort of security that was felt by all in the days that is described by Zechariah, days still future. How many cities and towns in this world of today, dear friends, would you find old men and old women sitting comfortably watching the young playing in the streets? Then the Bible talks about frailty, about illness, about disease, and about those, how those three things will be eliminated. We've already read from Isaiah 35. Our brother read that for us in the introductory reading. Verses 3 to 6, we read, "Strengthen ye the weak hands, confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert." But there's a problem, isn't there, dear friends? Because the sceptic in the world will doubt that God has the ability to do these things. That's to think as man thinks. That is to deny the power of God. And much is now being learned about the healing qualities that nature provides, and God controls nature. In the last book of the Bible, in chapter 22, we have a couple of verses that cast some light upon, especially the last few phrases, cast some light upon what God is in control of. Revelation 22, verse 1. "And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations." Why did I point out the last few words? Because, dear friends, it is clear from science that man is just starting to realise just what we can learn from trees. The geranium is able to send a chemical to its leaves. The chemical is totally abhorrent to the taste of the Japanese beetle. It won't go near the plant. There are trees that are often infected by leaf-eating insects. One of them, from memory, it's the ash. If those leaf-eating insects attack the tree and start eating the leaves on one of the branches, the chemicals in that creature's saliva is recognised by the branches of the tree and by the stem of the tree, and it sends a chemical signal across to the other branches and stops those leaf-eating insects from attacking the other branches of the tree. Now, if you're thinking I've been watching too much of Doctor Who, I haven't. That is a scientific fact. You can go onto the internet and you'll find that there are many scientists now who are discovering that both birds and the roots of the trees send signals to other trees to help them ward off creatures such as leaf-eating insects. That's not me making it up, that is genuinely true. The trees are for the healing of the nations. How much will God use nature to put right the ills of this world? Time will tell. God's control of nature and of the world is such that the environment itself will be changed. We read the first two verses of Isaiah 35. Imagine the wilderness and a solitary place being glad. How can a wilderness be glad? How can a solitary place be glad? The desert shall rejoice. Blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. Surely she's referring to the people that live in these places. and the changes that are made to wilderness and solitary places. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of our God. Doesn't that paint a wonderful picture of the kingdom age that God has promised through his word? But there's a problem, isn't there? Because how can we really trust that this book is the word of God? To quote a modern idiom, how do we know it's not fake news? And we've heard all about fake news in recent months and years. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 18. It's on the slide. We won't go there unless you particularly want to. It's your choice. But there in Deuteronomy 18, in verse 21, we have two verses that show us that God knew that people would doubt his word. And if thou say in thine heart, how shall we know that the word which Yahweh hath not spoken? When a prophet speaketh in the name of Yahweh, if the thing follow not nor come to pass, that is the thing which Yahweh hath not spoken. But the prophet hath spoken it presumptuously. Thou shalt not be afraid of him. So put in simple terms, God who controls and reigns over all things, he knew that there would be some doubt of his power from mankind. And what he's saying there in those few verses is if a prophecy that's spoken by a prophet from the word of God, if it happens or is fulfilled, it comes to pass, then you know that it's from God. If the thing doesn't happen, then it's not from God. It's a simple test, isn't it? So can we just briefly and quickly consider a few verses to show some historical events that are part of his plan and purpose? In Jeremiah 46, we read the following words. Fear thou not, O Jacob, my servant, saith Yahweh, for I am with thee, for I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have driven thee, but I will not make a full end of thee, but correct thee in measure, yet will I not leave thee wholly unpunished. Now, we know that this is talking about the people of Israel. It was the name, Israel was the name given to Jacob. It wasn't talking about Jacob himself as an individual, because by the time Jeremiah was written, Jacob was long since dead. Israel was to be punished, we read in those verses. But they wouldn't be wiped out, as other nations have been. Those nations who have oppressed Israel. Ask yourself the question, friends. Where is the Assyrian today? Where is the Babylonian today? Where is the Medo-Persian today? Where are the Greek and the Roman empires today? The Bible tells us that Israel would be punished. And we know that they were exiled from the land for many centuries. History tells us that. But the Bible tells us that God promised that he would bring them back to the land once more. And he's done just that. There's some lovely verses in Jeremiah 16 that are there on the screen. And we read of the work that God performed in calling them back to the land. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that it shall no more be said, Yahweh liveth, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. That's what happened years ago. But Yahweh liveth, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north, from all the lands whither he had driven them. I will bring them again into their land that I gave unto their fathers. Behold, I will send for many fishers, saith Yahweh, and they shall fish them. And after will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes of the rocks. So did that take place? As that happened? Well, the return of God's people began very slowly. In the 19th century, there were small numbers that returned to the land as part of what was known as the First Aliyah. But after the Zionist Congress in 1897, and then the subsequent formation of the Zionist movement by Theodor Herzl, the numbers of immigrants began to increase. At the start of the 20th century, the second Aliyah took place. There were comparatively smaller numbers that made the journey to the land of what was then known as Palestine. And there were some that returned to their homelands when they found work difficult to find. 100 years ago this year, in 1917, something called the Balfour Declaration was signed. And in the third Aliyah, more Jews returned to the land, with still more returning at the time of the fourth and fifth Aliyah prior to the State of Israel being declared in 1948. I imagine within the lifetime of one or two gathered here this evening. This gradual return was fulfillment of those words of Jeremiah 16. Because God sent fishers and hunters to draw the people back to the land. And today, the Jews, the people of Israel, have become one of the wealthiest and most influential nations in the world. Although we know that they have not yet fully turned to the worship of the God of Israel. In verse 21 of that chapter 16 of Jeremiah, we read, "Therefore, behold, I will this once cause them," the people of Israel, "to know, I will cause them to know mine hand and my might. And they shall know that my name is Yahweh." And here we read of detail that explains how the people of Israel in that kingdom age will once more recognize the name of their God. That name that was given to his servant Moses in Exodus chapter 3. That name that we understand as Yahweh. A name that is still not used amongst the Jews. We won't go there, but it's in direct fulfillment of the words of Jeremiah 44 and verse 26. So in conclusion then, we see that tomorrow's world will be established and controlled by God in a kingdom that he will establish when Jesus Christ will return as the Messiah to his people Israel. And we've seen how that kingdom will see people dwelling safely and securely, with illness, famine and disease being eliminated by the almighty power of God. And we know this to be true because his promises have been fulfilled in the past, and there may still be certain aspects of those promises still to be fulfilled. But largely, the promises that he gave to the patriarchs of old have been fulfilled. His people, the people of Israel, are in the land, but still under threat, as they well know, as we well know. They are a people that, humanly speaking, should have been wiped out several times over. Hitler tried, many others have tried, and yet they still prosper. Because they're under the guidance and the controlling hand of God. The words from our opening reading give us an indication of life in that kingdom age. We've already read verse 1 about the wilderness and the solitary place. But in verse 7 we read, "The parched ground should become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes." The land of Israel has been transformed over the last century in fulfilment of these words. Verse 10 of Isaiah 35. "The ransomed of Yahweh shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away." There are some events that will take place at some point in the very near future that will cause even greater fear and worry than the arrival of Donald Trump. There are prophetic words in Ezekiel, in Daniel, and in Revelation that was given to John that show us that God is in control not just of the environment and of nature, but he's in control of the kingdoms of men. You see, Britain needed to be separate from the EU. Russia and Britain need to be dominant forces in the world, militarily and commercially. These things are taking place before our eyes in the headlines of our newspapers. A famous verse in Ezekiel 38 says, "Art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil? And it's that group of people that will question that northern host that will come against Israel. Because the nations of Germany, Russia, France, Britain, Turkey, and of course Israel, are all prophesied in the scriptural records as having a significant part to play in the very last days. Events are rapidly taking place in these countries, and we know from our understanding of the scripture that there will soon be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation. And that time is almost upon us. We know, and we've heard from this platform or from many others, that we need to be watching. We need to be waiting for that day. Because events around the world are rapidly taking place. Taking place in preparation for that great day when Jesus will reign from Jerusalem. And then the words of Isaiah 65, verses 7 to 19, will be fulfilled. For behold, says Isaiah, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. But be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. The final question we need to ask is, God does have a plan for tomorrow's world, but do you want to be part of it? Thank you for listening.